Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll take a look at what's happening with immigration. With the 2020 election just 18 months away, the issue of undocumented immigrants is remaining a focus of politicians and the 24-hour news cycle. KGNU's Ros Brown brings us a report on how the falling birth rate in the US is likely to hurt economic prosperity for some of the same people who are saying that the country is full and who are wanting to turn immigrants away. Then there are an estimated 55 immigrants who've just been released by ICE and Border Patrol in El Paso who are headed to Denver, and some have in fact arrived early this morning. Local aid agencies are working to try to find space and support for them. In the light of that, we'll revisit a report from last summer where we hear from Casa de Paz, which is a local nonprofit that steps up to help immigrants, and it's located near the GEO facility in Aurora. Then on Resistance Radio this morning, we'll hear about resistance to consumerism. I paid a visit to the CU Boulder campus last Thursday when volunteers and members of the Environmental Centre at CU were assisting freshmen as they were clearing out the dorms. And what they discovered was a lot of waste and a lot of things heading to the landfill that really could be diverted. We'll hear a report on that and how resistance to consumerism can in fact be an act of political resistance. We'll hear more later in the Morning Magazine. After headlines from the BBC, we'll get a new commentary from Jim Hightower, and then it's time for a public affair. And today, as it is the second Monday of the month, it's time for POCO in Boco. That's People of Colour in Boulder County. At 9 o'clock, it is Counterspin, bringing us media analysis. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
A first-term Democrat in the Colorado House of Representatives resigned yesterday. Rochelle Galindo had represented District 50 in the Greeley area, which is one of the poorest in the state. CBS 4 reports that Galindo's resignation comes amidst allegations of sexual assault against her. However, Greeley police, who are investigating, would not specify the nature of the complaint. Galindo said in a news release that the claims are false, but they would make her fight against a pending recall effort untenable. Conservative groups have been collecting signatures on petitions for Galindo's recall, and they told Colorado Politics on Sunday that they had nearly enough signatures to send the recall to the ballot. Galindo had voted in favor of oil and gas reforms and the red flag law that allows a judge to remove guns from a person who poses a risk to themselves or others. Dudley Brown of the organization's Rocky Mountain Gun Owners and National Association of Gun Rights said that Galindo's resignation is the first win of the recall season. Earlier this year, Galindo said that she embodies diversity at the Capitol as a gay Latina woman. Her resignation means that a Democratic vacancy committee will name a replacement. House Speaker Casey Becker and House Majority Leader Alec Garnett issued a response to Galindo's resignation, saying they agree with her decision to step down and allow someone else to serve the people of House District 50. The Longmont Housing Authority has agreed to pay $170,000 in a settlement with four residents. The four live at the Suites housing complex, which had claimed that the police had unconstitutionally searched their homes at the direction of the Housing Authority. The Longmont Times Call reports that it's the second settlement out of the police searches. In 2017, the city agreed to pay $210,000 to four residents and the ACLU. The Suites is a low-income facility, especially for disabled and elderly. The ACLU represented the residents, and Rebecca Wallace, one of the attorneys for the ACLU, credited the settlements to a change in the leadership at the agency. The prior director was fired after a photo of him surfaced mocking the newspaper's coverage of the police activity at the Suites. The authority had earlier said that the residents consented to the searches of their units, but in a statement, Longmont Housing Authority said that it is apologizing on behalf of all its employees for the unauthorized action. Colorado has sued drug manufacturers, claiming that they conspired to fix prices and stop competitors. The state is among 44 others which brought the case in federal court in Connecticut against 20 different companies, including Teva Pharmaceutical, Sandoz, Mylan, and Pfizer. The states alleged that the generic drug firms raised prices between July 2013 and January 2015 on more than 100 medications, some with increases of more than 1,000%. A news release from the Colorado Attorney General's office says that in addition to rigging bids for the drugs, the companies agreed to inflate prices for medications treating basic infections, diabetes, cancer, epilepsy, HIV, and others. 15 individuals were also named in the suit. According to the Attorney General Phil Weiser, in a 2017 Colorado Health Access Survey, more than 500,000 residents of the state didn't fill prescriptions because of costs. Alfalfa's Market owes the cities of Boulder and Louisville nearly $300,000 in unpaid sales taxes. The Daily Camera reports that the tax liens starting in November last year show that the natural grocer has not paid Boulder about $150,000 and Louisville about $135,000, including penalties and interest. In 2013, Louisville authorities lured Alfalfa's with several large incentives, including sales tax rebates, in its first 3 years of operations. The majority shareholders of Alfalfa's sold their shares in late 2017. A spokesperson for the firm declined to comment on how it came to owe such an amount or plans to repay it. However, she did say that Alfalfa's is in the middle of a positive transformation and the new ownership group continues to heal all of its legacy issues. Colorado's first African-American federal judge died on Friday. Wiley Daniel was appointed to the U.S. District Court in Denver by President Bill Clinton in 1995. Daniel was the first African-American to be elected president of the Colorado Bar Association. The Denver Post reports that just 10 days ago, Daniel was pointing out how much work there was to do regarding judges of color on the bench. Another black judge, Gary Jackson, said that there is only one African-American among the nearly 200 state district court judges in Colorado. Judge Daniel thought it was important because that there be racial and gender diversity on the judiciary. He was 72 years old. Today it will be mostly sunny with the high in the upper 70s and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3. Tomorrow about the same, mostly sunny skies and highs in the upper 70s and low 80s. Right now it's about 55 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. With the 2020 election just months away, the issue of undocumented immigrants is bound to remain the focus of politicians and the 24-hour news cycle. Typically lost in all the noise is how critical immigrants are to the economy of the United States. In this report, KGNU's Roz Brown says the falling birth rate in the US is likely to hurt economic prosperity for some of the same people who say that the country is full and that immigrants need to be turned away.
President Donald Trump recently declared the US to be full and encouraged immigrants trying to cross the southern border to stay in Central America. At the same time, population growth in the U.S. is at its slowest in 80 years, which suggests that the anti-immigrant message might be short-sighted, because America's economic growth will depend on immigration and racial minorities.
If the decline that we're seeing in fertility rates continue, we will likely see the U.S. population dip below replacement levels.
That's Lena Guzman, a demographer with Child Trends Hispanic Institute. She's been poring over new data compiled between 2007 and 2017 that shows fertility rates in the U.S. are the lowest they've been since the government started keeping records. It wasn't that long ago that American women in the U.S. raised families of 5, 7, even 10 kids, but the average woman now gives birth to 2 children. For the most part, Hispanic women continued to have larger families. Now that is also changing.
Latina women, their fertility rates have declined by close to a third since 2006. White and black women have also seen declines, but their declines were of much smaller magnitude, somewhere between 5 to 11%.
Guzman notes that fertility rates are still the highest among Hispanics compared with any other racial or ethnic group, but adds that Hispanic women are also choosing smaller families for economic and career reasons. She says birth control availability is also a factor.
Much more increased use of contraceptives, much more use of effective contraceptions like the IUD, and much more consistent use of contraception. That is also likely playing a role.
Just last year, the George W. Bush Institute called policymakers' emphasis on further restricting immigration puzzling, noting a robust economy and significant contributions to that economy made by immigrants. In fact, the United States population grew by just 0.6% last year. Guzman says much of the birth rate decline among Hispanics is cultural, with Hispanic immigrants and their American-born daughters and granddaughters choosing a different lifestyle.
I think part of what we're seeing is what I call the changing face of Hispanics in the U.S. And by that, I mean the Latino population is changing. It's becoming less and less immigrant. it's becoming more diverse in terms of the country of heritage from which Latinos in the U.S. stem from. It's also changing geographically. So, for example, it's much more dispersed throughout the nation than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And these are likely driving some of these changes. So, for example, women of Mexican heritage experienced some of the steepest declines in the last decade among all Latina women. And so as you see the changing face evolve in the U.S., you'll see some of these differences emerge across Hispanic subgroups.
The U.S. population currently stands at 330 million. When women choose to have three or fewer children and immigration is discouraged, it means a smaller labor force, which poses a problem. Who will pay the costs of retirees for national programs like Social Security and Medicare? Guzman says a decline is not unique to the United States.
Really, what we're seeing is a pattern that's happening across in South America, in Europe. And what I think is surprising is that the fertility rates of the U.S. are getting now to the point where they're approaching or starting to slide below replacement level. And if that continues, what is likely to happen is that the U.S. will start to look like Japan or Italy, where we have an aging population. And that matters because too high fertility rates can place a strain on the educational or healthcare or the economy of a country. And too low of a fertility rate may mean that there's not enough people to support a workforce or an aging population.
That is currently a problem without a solution. While engineers and doctors, farm workers, and nursing home laborers are desperately needed in some areas of the country, they are often the same areas of the country that support President Trump's mantra that the U.S. is full. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It's just coming up on 16 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, yesterday, messages went out to the progressive community around the metro area saying that there are 55 immigrants who've been released by ICE and Border Patrol in El Paso who are headed to Denver. Well, some of them have arrived very early this morning, and local agencies like the AFSC and local churches are in the process of trying to help them. Well, one such nonprofit has a history of helping migrants, and they'll likely be helping some of these folks as well. So we're going to revisit a report that originally aired last August, produced by KGNU intern Lucy Suchek. She paid a visit to Casa de Paz, a local nonprofit that is stepping up to help immigrants.
Do you mind if I do some things for her?
No.
One of the moms that I picked up this morning and brought her here, she's the last mom who got out of the...
That was Sarah Jackson, a.k.a. Wonder Woman. She founded Casa de Paz, a fully volunteer-run home that offers hospitality to immigrants who have been released from the detention center in Aurora, as well as visiting family members of those who are detained. And normally, Casa de Paz doesn't fund plane tickets. But recently, after the zero-tolerance policy was implemented and then unimplemented, they've received an overflow of donations specifically for the Family Reunification Fund.
When we found out that there were parents who had been transferred from the border up here to Aurora after their children had been separated and also put into detention centers, just like everything, every cell in my body screamed against the trauma that we were putting these parents through. And so, kind of a spur of the moment decision, I said, I will at least pay one bond of one of these parents to get them out, and then I'll pay for their flight once they get out so that they can get to their family and be reunited with their child.
So far, they've bonded out 9 parents and bought about 20 plane tickets with these donations. But their work reaches far beyond payment for transportation and release. They provide a loving, welcoming home where people can stay for up to 3 days as they get back on their feet. In the 6 years that they've been open, they've hosted over 1,300 guests from 22 different countries, and they've sent immigrants to every state. And in addition to running Casa de Paz, Sarah has her own career and organizes an ongoing volleyball league with hundreds of participants, which funds the Casa. And so I asked Sarah what drives her motivation to do all of this work.
It's the right thing to do. If you put yourself in the shoes of someone who has just been released from a detention center and you try to imagine what you would do in a foreign city and you may not speak their language and you have not even a penny to your name, I'm pretty darn sure you would want a nice person to come alongside you and say, hey, How can I help you? We're here with you, and we want to make sure you get home safely.
Sarah said that years ago, she would never have imagined that she would be doing this. She says that she didn't even know anything related to immigrant detention existed. 8 years ago, she went on an all-expenses-paid trip to Mexico with a church where she was working, and learned more than she had ever anticipated.
I was expecting a vacation, but my life changed because for the first time in my life, I met people who were personally affected by our immigration policies and by the border. And I just kept imagining, what if this had happened to my family? Like, what if this was my dad who was just deported and he was trying to get back to his family to see them? Or what if this was my sister who was fleeing violence in her home country and came to the United States for safety? How would I want my family to be treated?
And so she came back to Colorado, rented a one-bedroom apartment across the street from the detention center, and made it a place for visiting families to stay with her. Soon after, guards from the detention center contacted her, asking if they could send over immigrants who were just released. And then the CASA grew. Sarah says she hears a lot about people feeling hopeless, feeling like you can't do anything. But actually, there's tons you can do. You can visit someone in a detention center, bring over a meal to the CASA, pick up and drop people off at the airport or bus station. So amidst this time of uncertainty and devastation, we can relieve at least some of the suffering. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Suchak.
And that report originally aired last August. Now, Casa de Paz is still going strong on helping immigrants, particularly those who have been released from the privately run GEO facility in Aurora. They're one of the organizations that will likely be stepping up to help a group of immigrants arriving today from El Paso, Texas, who have been released by ICE, and other local agencies are stepping up to help. And you can find out how you can help. The AFSC and Denver are also helping there, and you can find out more about them. Go to their website, afsc.org. That's the American Friends Service Committee. It is 8:21, and now it's time for Resistance Radio. And today we take a look at resistance to consumerism. And this is in the wake of the dorm cleanouts. It's an annual event that happens on college campuses around the country at this time of year. I paid a visit to CU Boulder's campus last Thursday to tag along with some of the folks from the CU Environmental Center who are trying to divert much of the waste that is left behind or dumped by many of those moving out from the dorms and instead send it off for donations. For example, the food can go to EFA, the Emergency Family Agency, and many of the soft items are going to other organizations that take donations, and they're trying to also recycle many of the items.
So we've got a box of mugs.
Thank you.
So I'm Angie Gilbert. I'm the Zero Waste Events Coordinator at CU Boulder, and we're doing our Move Out Donation Drive. Last year in 2018, we collected 44 tons of usable goods that we gave to different nonprofits to distribute out to the community however they see fit. This year, we're anticipating collecting somewhere around the same amount of usable products that students can't bring with them after they purchase them. They live in the dorms or the residence halls for about 7 to 8 months, and then they have no way to take the stuff home with them. And so this year we're doing some internal collections, actually, so that students don't have to buy some of the things that are repetitive, like mirrors, hangers, textbooks, some breakable items, things like that. And we're trying to collect those, and the hall's going to store those over the summer. And then the rest of the stuff is going to a local vendor, Resource Central, that's in Boulder. They're taking a bunch of our goods, and then the Salvation Army, and then U.S. again is taking a whole bunch of our items too. They'll distribute those to people in need or sell them at their facilities or give them to aid to other countries.
Well, we're looking here at a stack of mirrors that get hung on the back of doors that I'm sure anybody who's lived in a dorm would be familiar with. And it would seem that there's one of these in every dorm, and every August when you get the new student move in, people are very likely heading to Target or wherever and buying a whole bunch, and these are perfectly usable. It does seem like a challenge though to store everything. I mean, is that one of the issues in terms of reusing a lot of this equipment that gets rebought every August?
Yeah, so the students go out and they buy things that they anticipate they'll need. They kind of give them a list here of things that they're going to need, and then they go out and purchase these items, but unfortunately they only get used for a very short amount of time, which means they're all very usable again. So we're trying to retain some of those, these pile of mirrors here, things that would go in closets, and things that are easily transferable between person to person is important to retain. We also collect some outside collections here. So in addition to the textbooks, we do a free library on campus. We recycle the books if they're not usable. And then we also collect a bunch of office and school supplies, and then we give those away at the Environmental Center. In August, the Environmental Center stores them over the summer and then gives them away to students when they get here so they don't have to repurchase all those items.
You've got an interesting collection of crutches over here by the window.
Apparently, students get injured during the year, so we've seen a lot of boots and crutches for people that have injuries, so we'll donate those as well. Some of the things like crutches, mops, brooms, some of the halls will collect those as well. We have very little storage here just because it's an old campus, and not really a surplus store on campus, which it would be great to have that, but we do have a procurement store where some of the bigger items like desks and things like that do go and get reused on campus, but not for the student items.
Do you think just the general public would be just shocked or surprised at the sheer volume of all of this? I mean, I have seen, I don't know how many sacks full of hangers. I can only imagine they're in their thousands in terms of plastic hangers. The sheer volume of all of this, if you think how many students are actually staying in the dorms and how much stuff they each have as an individual.
Yeah, so we have about 7,000 students in 26 halls, and we actually built a new hall this year for 700 more students, so we're increasing another capacity. It is a lot of stuff. We're kind of a stuff society nowadays, very consumeristic. People think they need a lot of things, and then when they get here, actually, most of the things we pick up are brand new or still have packaging on them, or maybe been used once or twice. It is a lot of stuff. I think people that don't understand waste or the practice of trying to be minimal in your consumption or your footprint is shocking to some people that come and actually volunteer. And after they volunteer for one day, it changes their entire perspective on what people throw away. We do a lot of personal care items, which sometimes we'll pick up full shampoos, unused razors, things like that that would go into the landfill. And then there's a lot of food, actually, that's non-perishable that students think they need, and then they don't eat. Their parents send them care packages. It's very great, you know, that they're doing that, but they just don't need all these things, obviously, because we have so much here. We give those things to emergency family assistance in Boulder, which is very helpful for them, but overwhelming to them. We gave them 4,000 pounds of usable food and products last year, and that was a lot for them.
You know, people who are listening now, the move out has happened, but there could potentially be people listening who are getting ready to move in August, or maybe they're sending somebody off to college. In terms of everything that you find at the end of the school year, I mean, what's your advice to particularly parents maybe sending somebody off to college in terms of the stuff that you need and the stuff that you think you need?
I would suggest to them to buy things at thrift stores. Most of the things that we send out go to thrift stores, and if they could go buy those things, they haven't been used hardly at all, and they can be used multiple times. I would also suggest they don't need as much as they think they need. Maybe get started with the very simple things, some bedding, a few things. Students aren't probably going to change their bedding very often, or they might do some laundry, but they don't need multiple sets of sheets. We see lots of pillows. We see lots of excessive knickknacks or like bric-a-brac kind of things. Students don't need that. They're having experience at college. They're meeting new people. They're getting to know themselves. They're studying. They're playing sports. They're doing theater. They're singing. They're checking out the scene, being on their own for the first time. They don't need all these things. They don't need all this stuff, you know, a computer and something that makes them feel homey, but it doesn't have to be this whole extravagant artwork and things that they don't really necessarily need. It's expensive and it's wasteful, really.
I'm Will. I am a freshman here, so I'm just getting ready to go into summer here, just finished my first year.
And you're doing your dorm clean out?
Yes.
And so I see that you've just put something in the donate bin. What have you just put in?
I put in a mattress topper and some sheets and some hangers, basically stuff that I'll have to get new next year anyway, being that I'm not going to be on the same size bed, and just figured easier to keep it here. I'm flying all the way back to North Carolina, so.
Has this been an eye-opening experience, seeing how much stuff you have and maybe how much stuff you brought or bought that you don't necessarily need?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure after today I'm going to switch to minimalism because I realized that I brought, you know, and you come in freshman year thinking you might need all this stuff, and then you realize you don't need 75% of the stuff you brought. So most definitely an eye-opening experience, yeah.
Back outside the dorms, Sarah Dawn Haynes of the CU Environmental Centre shows me some of the stuff that's been thrown in one of the many dumpsters scattered around campus. This is ultimately headed for the landfill. So this was headed for the landfill, and it's a bunch of electronics, which is actually illegal, right, to put in.
Yes, and it's a really cool looking outlet with, you know,
an extension cord with a USB and everything.
Yeah.
And fairy lights and a fan.
It's quite possible that, you know, the fairy lights could be broken, but we still would want to recycle them and not landfill them. The copper inside the wiring is quite valuable.
Over at another dumpster, Sarah Dawn engages with Luke, another freshman who's come to this dumpster with a bag of items to discard.
Not this. Fishing gut stuff? A lot of fishing supplies.
We also have the donation. You can just throw them in there.
I don't know if I can do that with the fishing stuff.
I will
stuff,
take
right?
The net.
Yeah? It's kind of intertwined.
So you're a student, you're doing a clean out?
Yeah, and I'm just moving out, and I didn't anticipate it would be this much work.
Yeah.
So.
Are you a freshman?
Yes, I am.
Has it opened your eyes a bit to the amount of stuff that you're actually accumulating throughout the year?
Yeah, no, I just wish I'd done more time, because usually I'm really efficient, and I don't waste a lot, and this sucks. Yeah. This really sucks, not going to lie.
Some of the voices from the CU dorm cleanout that happened over the last week. Last week, I paid a visit last Thursday, and Sarah Dawn Haynes with the CU Environmental Centre says that the Environmental Centre is just about to turn 50 years old next year. And for about half of that, so for about 25 years, they've actually been helping with these dorm cleanouts. And she says in a perfect world, she would have people at all of the dumpsters around campus to have that kind of interaction that she had there with Luke to divert some of the stuff that would have gone to landfill and divert that to the donation centres and some of the recycling areas. And she also says recycling, salvaging stuff from the landfill and buying less stuff is an act of resistance. And we'll post photographs and videos from the CU dorm clean out online at news.kgnu.org. Just click on Resistance Radio.